Hi, my name is Jamie Ridgway, the head coach and owner of the Renaissance Academy of Martial Arts. And today I want to tell you about some of the programs that we offer at the Academy. So in our Little Dragons programs, our 4 to 6 year old class, that class is designed for, you know, teach kids focus. You know, at that age, it's very difficult for them to focus. So we want to teach them focus. We want to teach them basic tumbling, basic martial arts skills. At the same time, you know, stranger danger, what to do if there's somebody that comes along they don't know and how to act. So we go over all those things, kind of a prep program for kids. We teach a lot of jiu-jitsu in there too. The 7 to 12 year old kids, now they're a little more mature and they're ready to start taking a big piece of the information as far as like martial arts classes. So in that class, we teach them Taekwondo blended with Muay Thai kickboxing, blended with Gracie jiu-jitsu, so that they are well-rounded. They can kick, punch, clinch, and grapple. And that's where, you know, in today's world, we see a lot of self-defense situations end up, is on the ground. So they need to know that too. So when they come out with a junior black belt, not only are they focused, but they're also well-rounded as a martial artist. And you're gonna see things like respect and self-discipline at home through the program, because that's the most important thing that we're teaching the kids. And that is, hey, we don't want them to learn all these skills and not showing respect and saying yes ma'am and no ma'am and doing their chores at home. That's really what it's all about.
Hey guys, it's Obey, your host for the Podyssey. My guest today is Tommy Tran. Tommy Tran aspires to inspire others through the art of storytelling. He's a writer, photographer, a husband, and a new-ish father. Amongst his friends, Tommy is notorious for scratching items off his bucket list and making the most of every moment. Sojourners, please welcome my dear friend, Tommy Tran.
Yo, what's up, everybody?
Obey. Hey.
Thanks for having me on here, man. It's a big honor to be a part of this first season of your Podyssey.
Yeah, man. I'm excited to have you. I think we're going to have a really, really good conversation.
I'm looking forward to it.
So Tommy's sitting here, and he's probably wondering why I've invited him on. I've been trying to keep it kind of secret. But I really wanted to touch on some really cool things, and we're going to kind of get to the big thing that I really wanted to talk about, okay? So first thing is, here on the podcast, we love learning about everyone's story.
All right.
So we want to know, like, what's your story? Why is Tommy Tran Tommy Tran? So I'd love for you to just start off, like, where'd you grow up? Like, what makes you you?
Man, what's my story, man? Well, we all got individually interesting stories, right? So, I mean, man, there's so much that makes a person and, you know, the human experience, right? So,
gosh,
if I just kind of try to highlight a few things, I mean, well, I grew up in Harrisonburg, Virginia. So it's like 2 hours from here where JMU is. I was born in New York City. I was born to two immigrants. My dad was from Vietnam. My mom was from the Philippines. And that kind of created a really unique, like, experience growing up, you know, here in America, just being, you know, I go to school and I have, like, this culture, right? And I go home and I have this culture at home, especially having two parents who are from two different countries. Hmm. But, you know, what things that make me tick, I guess, is what you were saying. So, like, you know, I grew up, I played football, you know, high school. You know,
nice.
I did, you know, wrestling and track. And that was kind of like my high school story, was all about sports. And I went to Liberty University, where I met you.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. And, you know, highlights, I guess, you know, I got married about 4 years ago.
That's awesome. Yeah, come on.
Yeah, on Friday, it was my 4 year anniversary.
Dude, congratulations.
Thanks, man.
Four years. It doesn't even feel like it's been four years.
It does not feel like 4 years. It does not.
We graduated Liberty 5 years ago.
Yeah. Dude, it's wild, man.
We're getting old, man.
We are getting old. And I have a daughter named Adeline. And that's kind of like, you know, some highlights, I guess.
Nice. Okay, here's a question for you, Tommy.
Yeah, far away.
What would you say growing up? That was like, that's, man, like, there's a lot there. Born in New York City, growing up in Harrisonburg, Virginia. But what would you say were some of your influences? Like, was there a book? Was there a TV show? Was there, like, what would you say really influenced you? And, like, if you could accredit that to, like, part of the person, the creator that you are today, what would that be?
Man, there's been a ton of influences, man. But I think the biggest one would be, I think, reading as a whole. You know, I was growing up, my dad really pushed reading, especially because my father, you know, being English being his second language, you know, he really, really wanted me to fit in and learn how to communicate to everyone and anyone. So I was reading probably an average of close to almost 100 books a year from the time I was in like sixth grade to like my senior year, freshman year of college.
Wow.
A lot, mostly stories, just being honest, fiction stories. I was a huge fan of the Animorph series.
Animorph series.
That's right. Huge impact on me. I'm Narnia, obviously.
Dude, you take me back like... I'm like, I haven't even heard that name in like over a decade.
Oh, yeah, definitely, man. The, wow. The Hardy Boys. You remember those guys,
Yes, right?
And then obviously, you know, like everyone's stereotypical books, you know. Like as you get older, you read like the Lord of the Rings trilogy. You read Aragorn, the trilogy. There's the Pendragon. There's a 10-book series that I really loved. A lot of those books are super influential, but I would say probably the most influential book was a book called The Last Book in the Universe. It's a really, really unknown book for the most part. It's not really a popular book, but I picked it up because I just thought it was a really, really unique concept where it was basically taking place in the future where no one reads anymore. Everyone basically injects themselves with this, like, basically... think of like a liquid movie, right? And all of a sudden, like oh, I want to, instead of reading Aragorn, I want to inject myself with this stuff, and bam, I'm watching it, right? And basically, it takes away the reading, and basically, it creates two societies where one society is essentially like the high end society, the rich society, and reading has become like almost not even like a luxury; it just doesn't exist, and writing doesn't exist, and then. There's like the poor society, right? The other part. And it follows a character named Ryter, literally R-Y-T-E-R. And he's talking about, he's writing like the last book in the universe. And he's, instead of writing it, he's talking into like a little recorder that's writing it for him. And I don't know, that book really influenced me because I guess it really pushed me to believe that reading was the key to doing like anything in life. Like if you can read it and you can kind of process it up here, right? You could figure it out. And I guess that's, that was the big, probably the biggest influence on my life was just reading in general for the past 26 years or so.
Dude, that was powerful. I love that. I love to read. That's what I love about books is that it really just helps you either wrap your head around a concept or encourage you in some way. Yeah,
absolutely.
And when you connect with a book and connect with a character, there's nothing like it. You know, I really don't think films, TV shows can do it justice because I think that writing and reading is just, it's a long form, kind of like podcasting, where you really get to see a character develop. And so that story right there was just powerful because I think that kind of world, sadly, you kind of see some places in the world where that is kind of real.
Yeah.
And that, man, what would it be like if you could give a child a chance to really engage with books and escape your current circumstances to think deeper, to think outside themselves? That's powerful, man.
I had a question for you, actually, Ben.
Yeah.
Can you name 5 books that changed your life? Just curious.
Off the top of my head. 5 books that changed my life. Between a Rock and a Hard Place.
Okay.
The name is escaping me right now. It's a book on relationships that was really powerful. I cannot think of
it. Was it Manhood Restored?
I'll say this also. If I don't remember all 5, I will put them in the podcast.
Okay, gotcha.
We can have them. The Bible.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Easy. Gotta be. Redwall.
Ooh, okay.
That series was just super, super dope for me. Really, really powerful. I would probably say Harry Potter was really powerful.
Were you allowed to read them as a kid, though?
I had to convince you. My mom's like... Nigerian.
Oh, yeah.
And so she does not believe in witchcraft.
Witchcraft, right? Right, no, not.
Like, that stuff is just not her thing. So her thing was, if I was reading the book, she said, and I'm going to just do my mom's accent real quick. She said, "Obey, if I see you doing any of these witches and wizards, I will burn the book." And I remember I was like, "Mom, you can't burn the book. I borrowed this from the public library."
Oh, man.
And my mom is like, "I don't care.
Man.
Then you must pay them back the book if any witches and wizards." So I remember like hiding, reading under the blanket with the light, Harry Potter, just being afraid and being like, especially when Harry did Expecto Patronum and like cast out that, what's it? Oh, man, I haven't read that book in so long. That like demon white, like ghost thing. And it was just like super like intense scene. I remember being like, my little like pencil, like, "Expect Just whispering it, expecto patronum, and scared that my mom, I knew it, witches and wizards, Vincent, your son, and just like my mom losing it, like burning this book, and I have to go to the library and explain, like, hey, my mom's like not from America.
Oh, no.
She burned the book.
I need to pay for this book. Right? Oh no. Yo, my mom just beat me. My mom just beat me with a switch, man. I mean, that's what it was.
Like,
and
immigrant parents, and that's something that I love that we can connect on. It's just like, it is a different like world. And I don't think people understand, like, when you come home, you're not in America.
No, no, you're a different culture now, man. It's a different
world.
You're
not playing by the same rules.
No, not at all.
And so when you begin to like try and develop yourself, and especially as a kid, as you're growing up, it's hard because you walk outside your house and you see a world that's different than when you're at home.
That's right. That's
and so
right.
You have to always like play by these different rules and this kind of, these two dichotomies. And so, yeah, even reading, like, my mom and dad would have been like, the Bible.
Yeah, so yeah, the Bible, right?
And
yeah.
I'm like,
or Rich Dad, Poor Dad. That was a big one. Did your dad push that one on you?
No. See, my dad was just like, make money.
Yeah.
Like, it was out. My dad wasn't like, read books. He's like, why read books? So I ain't got time to read books.
Which is honestly funny for me, because Rich Dad, Poor Dad is now one of my favorite books. But back in the day, it wasn't, you know, because my dad was like, I'll read this book. Listen to the audio tape going away to school. And it's like, yo, like, why am I listening to this? Like, you know, I'm like, I'm in sixth grade.
See, more, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, that one's probably in my top 25 of all time.
Easily, like,
if I could
easily.
Release a book. And then that one brought me to one of my favorites of all time. Changed my mindset. Was Wealth, Poverty, and Economics by Thomas Sowell. Really deep economics book that was just like eye-opening to like a lot of things. I like really taught me about thinking tertiary. So like not just first level, second level, but really think three steps ahead, three levels deeper to any issue. And so that really helped me with like politics or just like anything in my life, just trying to think a little bit deeper about like the ramifications of like, hey, I want to help the poor, but do I just like back up the truck with, you know, boatloads of money? Will that change people's lives? Or is it like how do I really help people? And one of the big things for me, one of my big life mottos is love God, love people. So like to be able to do that, you have to really think deeper, because everyone's unique to themselves. Everyone comes with their own unique circumstances, and you don't want to treat people the same. So like that book really helped me with that. Man, you asked a good question. And I'm like,
tangents, rabbit trails.
Right. No, I love that. I mean, that's why you come to these podcasts. That these books that we're going to share are going to be books that like people can go and read if they haven't read them. Like, if you haven't read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and you're a millennial,
definitely should. 100%. Got to
read it.
Please.
Anything that you see me building is because that book really helps you unlock basically simple, like at the ground level, here is how you understand money, building wealth, and then making right decisions.
You seem like you're kind of person, you probably read How to Win Friends and Influence People, right?
Yeah,
I feel like that's like got to be on like top five most influential books of all time. It's so
that book was
powerful.
Really good.
Yeah,
that book
definitely.
Was really good. But it was also like, I love with certain books, they're like super famous. They're just very simple. Like,
there's lessons. A reason they're famous, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Man.
Very applicable knowledge, I think.
Yes. So, okay, so you're a new dad.
Yeah.
You're doing a lot of things, man. Photography.
Yeah.
Business. Okay, I want to know, like, as you're developing this person and you're going to all these things, like, you know, was there any advice from your parents or, like what, like, really is, like, pushed? Because I think one of the things for me is that my parents' story influenced me a lot, especially when I got older. And the older you get, I think the more you reflect on your parents and, like, your
Absolutely.
Story. So, like, did they ever give you anything that, like, really helped you? Because, like, you're doing so much. I mean, you're a writer, photographer, businessman, you know, husband, father.
You know, I think the biggest thing that both my parents kind of taught me in completely different ways is, like, my dad taught me really just never give up. I mean, my dad's story in itself, I feel like, is, like, always going to be with me, and it's, like, a legendary story. And I'll kind of give, like, a quick, like, highlight for those of you who don't know my father.
Yeah.
My dad, so post-Vietnam War, so post-America pulls out of Vietnam, right? My dad, my uncle, and my dad's uncle, they steal a boat. They sail to their freedom in the Philippines. They're held in the Philippines at an insane asylum for a couple months. Then they go to a refugee camp where they live for a year. Hmm. And then after that year, they're actually brought to America, where a Mennonite family adopts them. That Mennonite family I call grandma and grandpa to this day.
Wow.
And my father, you know, he goes on, and he's, you know, he's coming to America at a pretty strange time. I mean, there's like the civil rights movement had just happened.
How old is your dad?
My dad's probably somewhere between the age of 12 and 14 at this time.
Wow.
So he's really young, you know.
Wow.
At an influential time in his life. And so my dad's story, really, my dad goes on, and he eventually, he grows up right outside of Philly, right?
Yeah.
goes to New York City, becomes a doctor. That's where he meets my mom. That's why I was born there. And then they move. He becomes a doctor. I mean, I was born in the middle of my dad's medical school. I mean, that's, I mean, can you imagine how crazy that would be?
Yeah.
And then he moves to Harrisburg, Virginia, where he starts his practice. So my father, without saying a lot growing up, he taught me how to be a man because he never gave up. And he's faced so much controversy and obstacles, even just from the time I've been alive. I've seen my dad handle so many situations with so much grace and a mentality of just like tenacity is like the word. When I look at my father, I just think tenacity. Like he just does not give up, like no matter what.
Yeah.
And then my mom has always kind of taught me like just to be passionate. My mom is just, she's from the Philippines. It's a country where 10% of the country's economical wealth comes from outside the country. So a lot of people like, it's a stereotype, right? A lot of nurses, right? They come from the Philippines. It's because they get outsourced. They become a nurse. They work really hard. They work themselves out of poverty. They go become a nurse in Saudi Arabia or America or wherever in the world needs them, and they send a lot of their money back to the Philippines. And so my mom was like one of those nurses, and obviously she married my dad and became an American citizen. But my mom has really taught me how to be passionate about everything she does because she has literally kept a village in the Philippines alive because she's always been donating money back there and keeping those, my cousins, my uncles, my aunts.
Come on, man.
And it's just kind of, and it's almost strange. I almost forgot the original question because I'm going on this tangent.
It was more like the best advice, but I think you answered in a way of like what they have represented for you.
It's almost like what they've done. They almost never said a lot growing up, but because I mean, you have to understand their base language is my base language. Our common language is English, but the way they think is not
exactly.
You know what I'm saying? It's not English, right?
Exactly.
And I'm as American as I get, you know?
Right. Like, and that's something that like I, on this podcast, definitely want to really help people understand is that like the immigrant story, the cultural differences with some of the, your friends, like you don't even understand. Like I've been friends with Tommy, I know Tommy really well, but it's like, wow, I'm getting to really understand Tommy because I'm starting to understand like he comes from two cultures that came together and he's the product of two people that made, I mean, these vast, hard decisions at a young age. And for me and my father had a very hard relationship and it got way better over time. The older I got, the more I understood. I started to really seek reconciliation, started to really just love my dad for who he is and understand him. And so when you're growing up, you think things a certain way because you're like, man, this is not fair. I want life to be this way.
Yeah.
And then you begin to realize that like, oh wait, like my dad's from Nigeria, lived there most of his life. So the culture and everything that he understands
is Nigeria. Yeah.
Right. So like for you, you know, you were like, you know, your dad didn't say much. So I'm curious, like, did you feel like for y'all's relationship, was it always like you were best friends or like did it grow over time? And did you, because one of my big things is like men need to speak about these things.
Yeah.
And begin to speak about like how have they grown emotionally over their time and begin to like become who they are as men.
Yeah.
And so like for you, a father plays a big role in that. But when your dad's an immigrant, like my dad, like his first language was not English. And then coming over here, he grows into English. He's educated. He's moving. He's hustling. He's doing all these things. But it's like that relationship is really weird because like I grew up so American.
Yeah.
And it probably bothers him. You know, it's like for you.
I get it. No. I'm kind of like almost on the same page, man.
Yeah.
But like for me and my father, my relationship with him, at least growing up, revolved a lot around sports and academics. So it was like the balance between the two. And I was not academically inclined. Like my younger brother and sister, genius level. Like they're so smart compared to me. I was not that kid. And I think that partially had to do with being the oldest and kind of being almost the guinea pig child in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You know, I watched my dad literally build his business from the ground up. You know, I was kind of confused growing up of like my identity of like where I would fit in society. But that's me saying it now. And as a kid, it was more just like, well, how come I go to church and everyone's white or everyone's black and I'm this kid, right? Or I go to school and there's like 10 other people who might look like me, but they're not really from, like, cause when you say Asian American, it's crazy because it's like, well, Japanese culture and Chinese culture, that's completely different, right? Filipino culture, Vietnamese culture, that's like me saying Nigeria and South Africa, how similar are they? They're not.
Exactly.
We put a blanket statement, African American, and it's like, well, that just is describing like the color of your skin and that's about it, right? Like, I mean, so that is kind of, And just like, that's just kind of like how like my experience was. And so you're talking about my relationship with my father, and really my relationship with my father was, he was a rock for me. He was always there for me, but I know that there was always like a disconnect as far as like his values versus mine. Cause for example, like, you know, I got bullied at school when I was young. Right. And, you can't go home to your dad who literally spent time in an insane asylum, a refugee camp, and hopped on a boat and stole and sold. Like, what do you want to say to your dad? Like, oh, dad, hey, these kids are beating me up and calling me Chinese, but I'm not really Chinese, you know? Or, hey, they made fun of the pantsuit that my mom made. They called it worms, right? You know, like, what am I going to say to that? Or, oh, hey, dad, like, this kid, like, stuck my head in the toilet today and said he was going to duct tape my eyes open, you know? Like, so I look more like the white kids. You know, like, I'm saying these things that happened to me, and it's like, how am I supposed to relate to that to my father? How do you complain? So like a lot of my childhood and a lot of the hard things that I faced, I never really talked about it. And that's also partially because my father didn't talk a lot about his sufferings. But also it resonated with who I would become long term. And honestly, a lot of those things leaked out over time. Like, it's not like you can only take all the dark things that happen to you and put them in a box and bury them so deep before eventually they come out. At some point in time. And that's honestly been the last 5 years of my life. Late college especially, and then in my early years of marriage. My wife having to help walk me through some of these things. Being come like, on. Yo, like, why did you just get so upset about this? Why did this just trigger you? And like, I have to literally trace back my steps and go, well, when I was 13, the first girl I ever liked told me that she didn't like Asian guys. And that's why I'm insecure about feeling like I'm married to this really beautiful white girl. And it's like, yo, I'm always afraid like someone's going to take her from me because like I'm not worthy of this girl. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, it's wild how far back that goes. And unless you actually take time to be reflective on it, you will never know like how badly something hurts you. Now, everyone's got baggage, right? Everyone's carrying around something. But that's just like, that's kind of like you're talking about my relationship with my dad. I'm going like all the way through the Asian American experience, right? But you talk about rough relationships. It's actually interesting. My rougher relationship was more with my mom. My mom and I kind of struggled more with like, it was kind of like oil and fire. Like, kind of like her, she was so passionate and always so loud and always so like, yo, it has to be this way. And if it's not this way, like, it's not the right way. And I kind of gained that from her. Like, that's why I'm probably stubborn and strong, is because of her. Because like, she taught me to like kind of plant my feet and kind of don't move. Like, get ready. The world can move, but I'm not moving, kind of mentality.
Dude. Man, that's good. Okay. All right, I want to unpack some of that because I felt a lot of that. And, you know, I'm not a first-generation American. I was born in Nigeria. But, man, a lot of things you talked about I find very fascinating. This is why I wanted to.
You came here when you were 9, right, 10, you know, around that time?
I was 425.
Oh, wow. So you came here, like, really. Yeah. So American culture really is your culture. I mean, you never really grew up outside of
anything. That was the weird thing was that I lived in two dichotomies, you know, at my home.
Yeah.
I'm a Nigerian elder son.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then when I walk outside, I'm in America and there's different rules and different ways to live. Like I remember like you were talking about getting bullied. I remember thinking when I moved to America, like I was gonna be best friends with all like the black kids.
Yeah.
And I remember getting bullied. My only bullies were black like Americans.
Did you get an accent? Is that what I?
Oh, dude, accent, my skin tone. The only person I've ever fought or like, well, besides my brother, that I've punched outside of my family
was a bully. Oh yeah,
they jumped my brother.
Oh no!
And I remember walking to the park and punching that person.
Oh snap!
And I remember looking him in the eyes and I remember saying, "If you ever touch my brother again."
Oh, snap.
I will kill you.
You a big dude too. I mean, I wouldn't mess with you.
And I'm not a curse. Like, I don't curse. I don't get angry. It was just like, that's like how. And I remember that playing in my head.
So you weren't really an angry kid. Like you didn't.
No. Like, well, I have my mom is very like fiery and passionate.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's like her passion and her fire. I have that. Her stubbornness, like you said with your mom. So I was like, yo, that's like. And my dad's very cool, calm. Yeah. But it was very hard for me because like me and my dad, but I didn't cry a lot. You know, this dude had been through a lot, but never talked about it. Yeah. So in the last couple of years, one of the things I've been really focused on for myself is like mental health, emotional health. And I found myself having emotional breakdowns or watching a movie and crying because I'm watching a father's relationship with his daughter and being like, dang, does my dad love me that much?
Because men don't talk about that stuff.
Exactly. Man. And I remember like the greatest thing I ever did in my life, and I encourage anyone listening to this to do this. I sat my father down and we had dinner and we just talked. Like we just talked about everything. And I just opened up, and even though it felt weird to say it, I just opened up to my dad. Yeah. And talked about the things that I was struggling with, because I knew that I needed true freedom and I needed to really heal, and I needed him to understand that, like, this hurt me, but this doesn't define you. Because for my dad, it was like hard to hear that. And he was like, dude, my dad died when I was young.
Dang.
And I was sitting here like, you know, you ever complain? And you complain to a man that you know has been through a lot.
Then he
goes, wow, well, I didn't have a dad. And so I was just trying, like, this is, you were my first attempt at fatherhood. And I didn't have an example.
Oh, man.
So imagine, like, your father, and he goes into culture, you're now the leader. All right, all the kids are looking up to you.
Yeah.
So my dad lived his whole adult life. 13, dad dies, and then he's just...
And he's a man. He's a man house. Yeah. I can't even imagine that.
So that's why, like, when you said, like, you know, your dad was, like, this, like, just steady rock. That's how my dad was.
Yeah.
You know, like, taught me how to ride my bike literally on his way to work. The dude's pulling his tie. I'm like riding. I'm scared. I'm wobbling. I'm like turning back. Dad, I'm doing it. And then I realize my dad's in the car. Obey. Good job. Puts that thing into reverse. Because for him, love is action.
Yeah.
He's Eastern minded. So he's like, I'm going to go provide for you.
Yeah.
And I had to realize that, like, for my dad, love's not always going to come in like, I love you.
He's going to be able to put a roof over your head, give you food on the table, going to be that stability. You know, I get that. That's how my pops is, too.
Exactly. Yeah, so that's what I love. Like, that's what I found, like, so fascinating. Like, for you, like, I knew I was going to invite you. I said, it was December 24th, and I said, I was reading your Instagram post. I said, yo, I'm going to invite this guy if I ever have a podcast to come talk, because I think the Asian American story is not really talked about in America. And some of the things you literally address with the bullying and things, I was like, yo, I'm relating to that so much. And I think people were like, what? Like
that's a thing?
Right. Asian Americans. Like, you even said, like, it must really bother you. Like, it bothers me when people say, hey, you're from Africa. Like, it's like this whole huge place and we all think alike. You're like, no, like, I'm half Vietnamese, half Filipino. So, like, is that, like, close to China?
Actually, you know what? It's hilarious. My coworker recently, and bless her heart, she literally looked at me the other day and asked me, she said, how close is the Philippines to Mexico? She's like, is it, like, off the coast? And bless her heart. I mean, she obviously meant no offense by it.
But
I had to look at her and just be like, what? Like people, like, don't realize, like, where the Philippines is? And I had to think that through. And I go, well, you know, I have to justify it, because in America, Asian Americans alone are less than 6% of the population, right? Mm. And so you're looking at roughly, like, Chinese is the biggest. I want to say it's, like, close to 4 million Chinese, and I want to say it's close to 3 million Filipinos, the next biggest group. So you have to think that most of those Asian Americans congregate in cities. So some people just don't grow up with Asian Americans, let alone grow up with specifically Vietnamese American, Chinese American, whatever, right?
Yeah.
So that's why I try to give as much grace as possible in the situations.
Right.
But sometimes it does make me laugh. Like, questions like that makes me laugh. Like,
well, so the culture in America doesn't really, I think, promote Asian Americans. Do you feel like growing up here, like, how did you feel? Like, excuse me, for me, growing up here, it was hard because all people knew about Africa was, like, one documentary with some dudes clicking, like, in a tribe.
With a Coke bottle, right?
Right. And that's all they knew. And now it's like, Wakanda forever. And it's like, you got white guys wearing kente cloth looking at me like, Wakanda forever. And you're like, dude, what are you? Like, what? Black Americans who 10 years ago would have called me, like, African booty scratcher are now like, hey, bro, I did my 23andMe. Got some Ethiopian in me, bro. And I'm like, what? It's like the whole culture is now like...
It's changed. It's gotten so much more accepting. And I think that's a good and bad thing, right? Because I think on one end, it's like, I'm really, really happy. I mean, Black Panther was a huge film for African-American people.
Right.
And I think for... especially there's a large amount of African-American people who have come here without an identity.
Right.
Because it was stripped away because of slavery, right?
Right.
So it's like... The whole 23andMe thing, I kind of get that. I mean, I also understand, too, that 10 years ago, they probably were picking on you. But now, modern day, it's almost like we're a group of people are trying to find an identity.
Right.
And I think that's a beautiful thing.
Right.
On the cross end, though, I also think that sometimes it is a bit of a bandwagon thing. Because...
That's my issue with the film, is that the story and the history and the ancestry was always there for you to go take and learn.
Yeah.
And so I just find it, and also Black Panther is more of a Afrofuturistic.
Sure, sure.
And so, like, for me, I understand when I look at other cultures. I come from a tough country.
Yeah.
You know, I come from a country where Boko Haram can steal 300 girls, rape them, mutilate them. You know, like Kony 2012 was not just like a cool movement for me. I understand that that's a normal thing.
That's literally something you're directly connected to.
Right.
That's a legacy. Yeah.
So for me, it's like, listen, like if you're gonna go this path, you have to be ready to take the hard truth with being African too. Like, hey, be proud to be Egyptian or Ethiopian or for Congan or from Algeria or from Cote d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast. Like, be proud of that, but also be ready for some hard truths. Also be ready for some oppression from your own people. Also be ready to learn that, like, Africans sold their own to slavery. Also be ready that we've killed our own, that we've pillaged our own, that we're still fighting amongst
each
other.
There's nothing new under the sun. There's a lot of bad things
like,
happen.
I don't want people to, like, go into this thinking, man, America's hurt me so bad that I'm going to attach to this new culture and then realize, or at least, like, not try and realize that culture too is going to bring some pain into your life too as well, because there is nothing new. There is no perfect group of people that just have lived under the sun and they dance and they're all happy. You know, that's what I saw with Wakanda. It was a great film, but I want people to be careful not to think that that's really what's going on in Africa, because it's not. Women are not in leadership. You know, women are not leading the armies. We're not having this like ecosystem where everyone's just living with each other. No, it's North and South Sudan. I'm killing you, and I'm not stopping. We're going to have to separate this country until you're dead.
Wakanda, for me, and the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and that kind of representation, I think one of the good things, I think, is that it gave people a hero to look at and almost an inspiration of what could be, right? Of what, and I think that's also true. Why I do think that at the end of the day, Black Panther was very important and was very good. You know,
I think Black Panther was good. I just think that, like, I was sitting here.
I can see how close to home, though. I can definitely see
like,
that.
Like, imagine, like, I've been African my whole life.
And all of a sudden, now it's cool. Now it's cool. I feel that.
More Kente. Bro, I'm telling you, I got people wearing things. People about to cheer for different teams during the World Cup. It's just like, it was just like a switch. I just remember being, like, I was from Nigeria, and I was like, okay, cool. But it was just—it's beautiful in a way, and I'm happy to I'm curious.
But it stings because you lived in a world when it wasn't cool.
Yes.
Correct? Yeah.
Like I still remember my bullies were black.
Yeah.
And so I think that there's still some reconciliation between Black America, and African Americans, because we still have not addressed the pains that we've caused each other, and so mostly me being African, like West Africans to Black people, but yeah, I just think that it was just a unique film. I got emotional seeing Africa celebrated. And then I think of you and I'm like, I mean, no offense, I think the best we've gotten for you guys is Crazy Rich Asians.
That's right, Crazy Rich Asians.
Did you like it? Was it?
So I'll be honest, when the film first got announced, I was not cool with it. Like, I was just like, yo, like, what are we doing? We're doing a whole
Asian cast.
Like, your
first all-Asian
cast
is...
And, like, in 25 years, the Joy Luck Club was the last one. It was in 1993.
Wow. You've waited 25.
25 years for a Hollywood cast Asian. So it wasn't all Asian Americans. It was, you know, Asian British, Asian American, Asian Australian, right? It was a broad spectrum. And I think that's actually what made me... When I started digging into what Crazy Rich Asians would be. Like, so when I first heard about it, I was like, ah, cool, whatever. It kind of moved on with my life. But then when I circled back to it, and so you have to understand also, this film came out the same year Black Panther did. Mm-hmm. So already, like, there's already a big inclusion movement. Like, a lot of the African American people are kind of fired up. Minorities in general are fired up.
Right.
And like, I grew up around black culture. So like, I've always, like, whenever something happens for black people, I'm always for them, right? I'm always like, yo, that's great. Like, I'm happy for you. I have a lot of black friends, and that's, you know, and honestly, that culture really influenced me a lot, right? But that being said, so it was almost like a piggyback off of that. Like, it was almost like Black Panther was a big step, and then, like, Crazy Rich Asians was coming out of there. And that's why I was like, yo, like, are we copping them a little bit? Are we going to do an Asian superhero next? Like, what are we doing? I was a little negative.
I'm down for that, yeah.
I'd be down for it, but I think I just didn't want it to be, like... And I guess I didn't also really do the research on Crazy Rich Asians.
Right, so you wanted it to be this authentic thing. You didn't want it to be like, hey, they're doing a black like pro
let's
movie.
Let's do our own film,
you
right?
I got some Asians over here. Let's cast them, right?
And then
the script was already, and the trailer was like, you were probably like, okay, what is this?
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I was skeptical.
Yeah.
But I will say, I ended up loving it. And here's a couple things I did. When I started digging into it, first of all, it was a book. Didn't know that. And I started looking into like what it was actually going to be. And really what the film talks a lot about, it, besides the whole money thing, the money right. thing is funny.
And I've watched the film. It's phenomenal.
It's a great film. Yeah. If you take away the whole money thing and you talk about the root of the story, you're talking about an old Asian mentality versus a new Asian mentality. And so you're talking, and you can replace that with anything. You can go Chinese American versus old traditional Chinese American thought, Chinese thought, sorry, not Chinese American. Or, you know, in this case, it's Chinese American versus old Malaysian Singaporean money thought, right? And so, right. And the juxtaposition of what we hold as valuable, whereas America really does put this whole, like, the American dream, it's on you. You know, a lot of the world, when you turn 18, it's not like you go and you leave your home and you get a job, right? A lot of it is you seek to build a greater legacy, your family. You get married, you move in with your family, right? Right. But in America, it's not like that at all. We encourage actually individualism. Like, hey, like, go live your dream, go pursue it,
that's
whatever
right.
that is.
That's
and
right.
it's not necessarily a good or bad thing. It just comes with pros and cons. And Crazy Rich Asians was a very interesting film for me in just so many ways. But the biggest thing that I took away from it was like, the different values that different cultures have. And then also one thing I loved about the film too was that if you go through the cast and you look, every type of Asian, like, is in there. Vietnamese American, Filipino American,
right.
Filipino just from the Philippines, right? Chinese Australian,
right.
Asian Malaysian, you know, Asian right. British. It was just so many different types of backgrounds. And it was really cool to see a film that it wasn't just all Asian Americans doing kung fu together, right? It was like, it was something different.
Right. It wasn't Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon part
exactly, three. Exactly. Right. And one good thing I really did think too is that a lot of times in films when I was growing up, Asian men were never really perceived as masculine or good looking even, or just kind of, and it was kind of cool to see like Henry Golding, you know, the main Asian guy, which yeah. he was a good looking dude. And like, it was kind of cool to see him like almost the whole like sex appeal Asian guy kind of thing. Cause like growing right. up, like that was never my thing. I was never like, yo, as an Asian dude, like, I feel like I have an identity as being, like, it was either, like, Bruce Lee, Jackie Chan, or the dude in the background doing math. Like, that was your movie casting, right? And
right.
now, in modern day, right. it's not like that anymore. It's really gotten a lot better. And now it's, like, Henry Golding specifically. I mean, he was in a movie with, he was played Blake Lively's, Blake Lively's husband. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Like, you're, like, standing in place for Ryan Reynolds? That's kind of cool.
Right.
It's, at the end of the day, Crazy Rich Asians, important, I think, for Asians as a whole, but
right.
I think also important for, I think, Americans to kind of look at us in a different light. And I think to just add on to that, I mean, you have, like, Fresh Off the Boat's doing really well, right? You have...
Which is funny.
It's hilarious.
Very
yeah,
well written.
It's really well
yeah.
done.
Yeah.
You have this film that just came out. It was Call Me Maybe on the... Always Be My Maybe. It's Ali Wong and Randall Park are in it. Randall Park is from Fresh Off the Boat, and Ali Wong is actually one of the writers from Fresh Off the Boat.
That's a Netflix
it's
show.
A Netflix.
Just
it's
dropped.
A movie,
right?
It's a movie.
It was
yeah.
a movie. Okay.
It's really
I need to
well
watch
done.
That.
You should
yeah.
check it out. It's and I think it's, I think a lot of the things that I felt as a kid, I don't foresee happening
for your daughter,
for my daughter, or yeah. for the next couple of generations, as least as far as Asians, because I think that it's almost like, I hope anyways, I hope, you never know, but
right.
at least the way I felt, I just foresee representation happening a lot more now. And then on one end, it does almost feel like some people are forcing it, like some TV shows are like, oh, we have to cast X and X and X for a formula, but inclusion is an inclusion, no matter what. And if there's some little Asian guy at home, you know, 6 years old, looking on TV and looking for the kids who look like him, and he sees Randall Park, you know, winning the girl, and he feels good about it, I'm happy for him. You know what I'm saying? That didn't always happen for me.
Right.
And so I think that's why in movies and television, wherever, it's important. For me, it was when I was in late high school, I found a lot of dudes off of YouTube, actually, who really, really influenced me to feel more confident about being Asian American, being myself. And those guys are from the West Coast. It's Dumbfounded. He's a rapper. Timothy Adela Ghetto. He's an entertainer.
Dumbfounded is so fire.
Dumbfounded.
Yeah.
He's awesome, man.
Yeah.
You have JK Films, who their whole entire thing is teaching good things in a bad way. And Wong Fu Productions, which were like this basically cinema group, three guys who created these amazing films. And in these Asian Americans kind of showed me like, oh, like your identity is more than just you're Asian. Like you gotta like be you, And you got to be confident in who you are.
Come on.
And you know, I've never met any of these guys, but it's kind of been on my bucket list. I flew out to LA recently.
Yeah.
It's for Gaze's wedding, right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of cool because I got to see, kind of walk in the same place as like a lot of my quote unquote heroes of like late high school and college.
Wow.
I got to kind of see where they grew up and stuff. And it was just kind of, it was kind of nostalgic, man. It was kind of like an end to an era from me in a weird way.
So do you feel like those guys influenced you as you started to like build your business? And now I think you started a clothing line.
Mm-hmm.
When you felt like, all right, I'm going to let you talk on what Next Nomads is, but like as a photographer, which you're a bomb photographer.
Thanks, man.
Do you feel like your apprehensions? Cause I think when I was creating art and I've just started, right? So as I'm getting into this and I'm finally just putting out my stuff and I have a great, fantastic team behind this camera and they are encouraging me to put out more and I'm finally putting out work, but you get nervous, you get scared, you know, and I look to people like, for example, like Idris Elba, you know, I'm African and he's like, for me, the first like besides they made Denzel, but like the first like heartthrob African lead guy, you said, like where you were like, yo, it's dope to be dark chocolate. First off, it's healthier than milk chocolate.
That's right. That's right.
So it's just dope to be like, it's dope to be me. And so when I accepted that for myself, and as I've been on this path of like learning to love myself and like pushing myself to like to do what I was put on this earth to do, like this podcast, I have these people that I look to produce art. So it was like, were those the guys that pushed you and you were like, you know what, I'm gonna do it?
Yeah.
Or was it your wife, or you know?
You know, definitely. I mean, you know, I knew my wife since high school. We were really good friends in high school. But I think that, like, and she has definitely been, like, the modern day person to push me.
Wow.
But definitely the person who, the groups of people who started me are the guys who I talked about before. Because kind of when I was in late high school, I was kind of like, you know, I don't really know, like, where I'm gonna fit in society. Like, as high school was coming to an end, I was like, am I gonna go work at a gas station? Like, am I gonna go to college? Like, I genuinely did not have like
right.
any drive to.
I didn't want to go to college. I just wanted to play football when I was coming out.
Yo, I literally told my parents, I was like, I'm not going to college, which you don't do to Asian, like first gen, yo, or any immigrant, yo, like it was like the biggest heartbreak for them. And like, I really thought my mom was going to kill me.
Bro, it was like they only had in their mindset, doctor, lawyer.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
that's it.
Like
that's
if that, you just go ahead and just live in the street.
Exactly. You might as well be homeless or go sell drugs, rob a bank, whatever, right? So like,
right.
I took this road trip, right? And I was like, I took this road trip with my best friend, Jesse, you know, because we went to Wells College together. And I did that. I spent a summer before I actually went to college of just going on adventures.
That's smart.
Jesse and I, we visited our friend Jave and we spent some time in Georgia. I went and worked at a camp, a Young Life camp actually, that I worked with special challenged folks and
right.
Both mentally and physically handicapped. And that actually taught me a lot. That taught me a lot about how, like, just because someone's physically handicapped doesn't mean they're not smarter than you. And like, there was especially this kid that I was helping and he literally like probably an IQ north of 160 easily. I mean, just the way he talked to me and the way he communicated, he was telling me about, I'll never forget what he was talking about. I have no idea what he was saying. He was talking about like supernovas and something about how black holes, if you went through them, like you could probably go back in time. And he was basically telling me like quantum theory with, and I'm sitting here like 17-year-old me, like looking at him like, yo, I'm dumb. Like I'm really dumb.
Right.
And here I am talking to this kid. Like when I first talked to him, I was talking so slow. Like, cause you know, he was physically handicapped and it's not like I was mean as a kid to these kind of folks, but I just didn't understand. And that was a big wake up call for me, just understanding, oh, like physically handicapped, like, oh, and so that was something that happened to me that summer. Like,
wow.
Then I went up to Canada and I saw a lot of the East Coast, and it was on these trips that I realized that I didn't know enough, because I didn't see enough and I never saw anything outside my hometown. And my hometown, and then I saw the Philippines, and that's it. Like, that's my only two places I really associated my life with. And realizing that I was watching these dudes on the West Coast doing their art thing and, you know, chasing the dream or whatever, I said, you know, I need to go somewhere that I need to explore who I am, and I also need to figure out what I believe and what my role in society means. Or I genuinely thought that life had no meaning. Like, dude, so that's why I ended up at Liberty. That's why I ended up at Liberty, actually.
Yes, dude. See, I recruited for our former university for 4 years, and one of the big things that for me was just so, like, I just saw time and time again was young people that just were not ready for the world. And maybe college wasn't for them, or they just didn't know where they were at. And I really now believe in the European model of a gap year, or at least a summer, to really start to define yourself. Because when you're young, you have a lot of either hobbies or interests, but you have to figure out what your purpose is. And also, how are you going to, you know, make a living? And so for me, I think that, like, I really do believe in what you did. Like, taking just a summer or a year to just, if you want to go travel the world, figure out a way to do that, go, you know, au pair, nanny, and in Spain and live it, go do that and get that out of your system and just kind of, like, think. One of the things that I've been really encouraged with my close friends here is, like, to take time away just to really think about where I'm going, where I'm headed. And I think that when you're young and you're about to make a very big financial decision, you don't even think it's a financial decision. You don't realize I'm about to get in so much debt.
100K debt.
Right.
Signing a dot line.
Yep. Right. Yep. So, like, before you make that decision, our culture and our parents just were like, and this is not to, like, a knock on them. They just wanted us to survive. They thought education is the only way.
Yeah.
But now we know there's other opportunities. So for me, it's like, if we're able to give these kids just a year, 6 months.
Figure it out. Take your time. Yeah.
Just to take your time. So, like, you can, hey, if you really thought your art was what you wanted to do, have your parents, like, let you live at home, do that art, and you realize, oh, this is a hobby. This ain't really what I want to do. If you really think you want to be the top-notch rapper you think you want to be, take some time. Go sure. Do that. Pursue it.
Chase it. See what
right.
happens.
Right. Like, one of my little brothers is doing that, and I'm not against it. I at first, I was like, I don't know. Like, Isaac, I don't know if that's really what you should be doing. But then I realized he's really gifted.
Yeah.
Really wants to do it. And I was like, why should I force him to go to the state college and waste away time?
And you know what he's going to be doing the whole time he's at college? He's going to be writing raps because he's going to be dreaming of that.
Exactly.
And you should let him figure it out. And because you never know, man. Like, look at Lil Wayne's story, man.
Right.
Lil Wayne, like, he told his mom, he's like, yo, like, give me 1 year. Let me figure it out.
Right.
And he did.
Drake literally was like, yo, mom, like, I really want to get to acting. And then was like, hey, I'm going to leave my lucrative, like, acting role, which you don't always get in the acting world. And I'm going to go rap. Like, what? Aubrey, don't do this. Do not do this. Sandra was probably sweating.
Probably, definitely. 100%.
You know, so I think that, like, what you said was just so powerful is that if you're a young person out there, you need to understand that, like, you have time, and the lie that you've been told is college is the only way.
It's not a race either, too.
It's not a race. And you're on a journey, really. You're sojourning. You need to take time to let yourself sojourn. And understand, you're only on this path by yourself.
That's right.
There's no one else. There's not me versus Tommy.
It's
me
versus producer you, man. Drew. That's all it is.
Exactly.
The best version of yourself.
You
that's
and
what
God,
you want.
You and God are walking this out. And so as you begin to walk this out, you got to give yourself time to be able to stop, rest, think, try things, and realize, okay, this is not really for me. And that's okay. That's okay. For me, it was like, oh, I'm going to do business. And then I was like, okay, but what kind of business? And then I was like, ooh, I'm gonna go recruit for a little bit. And then I was like, I'm gonna do this, and I'm gonna do this. And then I realized that, like, oh, this is my purpose. Oh, it's always been right in front of me, you know? And I was gonna be a lawyer for a little bit. I thought about, you know, at one point I thought I was about being a doctor, but then I realized me and blood just don't mix. And so, like, I can't handle that. I will pass out. And so it's like, as I allowed myself to, like, is it really law?
I'd be lying to you if I wouldn't say that. There are times that I don't sit there and wonder if my parents' streamlined idea of a job, like, oh, like, go be a lawyer, go become a doctor, go make money. I won't lie. Sometimes I think back and I go, is it too late? Like, because, like, especially when you're struggling or especially when money gets tight, you go, well, it wouldn't be tight if I was a doctor. But the truth is, I know myself and I know that I wasn't meant to be a doctor. I wasn't meant to be a lawyer, you know? And I think that I've come to terms with that. And it's not even just because, oh, like, I'm not smart enough. It's more just like, oh, like, I never would have been happy. I would have been one of those guys that if I really would have somehow survived law school or medical school, I would have been really depressed all the time. Like, and that's not what we want in our lives.
Exactly.
You know, you get one shot, one life, like, live it.
I tried
to whatever the best you're supposed to.
I tried the 9-to-5 and then I realized it's not for me. Excuse me. And then I began to really realize that, like, for me, being in a cubicle, having someone check in on me every waking moment, hey, how long was your lunch? Being forced to not be like, hey.
Yo, did your parents freak out when you said you're quitting the recruiting job?
Dude, when I quit working for Liberty University, it was the happiest I've seen my parents.
Really?
I kid you not.
Okay.
They had gotten to a place for me where they saw, I mean, you have to think, back in that time period, like, and this is something I'm going to definitely talk about on the podcast, like, I was so depressed and so just, I was in the wilderness, man. I knew I didn't want to, like, just continue to be in the cubicle and do the cube life and do the 9-to-5, and I was too fearful to take a chance. And the greatest thing my parents did is they usually try to do things. You know, immigrant parents, like, boom! Like, it's just, like, aggressive, and they just try and, like, but they don't understand how to really talk to your heart. My father called me. I still remember this. It was in September. It was, like, I think right around Labor Day, September. And we had one of the, again, this is after we've worked on our relationship, we had one of our best conversations ever. And we talked about just his story. And he's like, Obey, how can you live a life of fear where if I lived in that kind of fear, we would never be where we're at?
That's right. That's right.
And so I was sitting there. I was like, my dad is a perfect example of trust God, go for it, and you land on your own 2 feet. And so I sat there and I was like, he's right. This dude left another country, flew across the Atlantic Ocean, left his wife and his 2 kids, and said, hey, I'm going to see you. I'm going to go make it.
That's crazy.
That's crazy, man. So when he looked at me and he was like, and I'm over here just like, I don't know if I'm ready to like start my own business and do this. And it was crazy because I was already doing it, but I just wasn't ready to take the next step.
But he walked so you could run. You feel me?
It's like, I read the books. Rich Dad Poor Dad. It's like, dude, it's right there. So I took my DJ business full time. I expanded it. We're adding more DJs. I started this podcast. And I'm just investing in myself. And every time, ever since I've left, I kid you not, Tommy, financially, just my emotion, everything about my life has improved for the better. And my dad was right. He was right. That if I believed in fear, I would never gain success.
That's right.
And so to have success, to have joy, and for me, the big thing for me is joy and peace. To have those 2 things, I had to let go of fear. So that's how I got here. And for you, on that point about fear, I'm thinking you started a clothing line.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm sure, were you fearful? Like, I mean, you probably go into your wife like, hey, I know like we're young and married. I mean, you had just had Adeline when you dropped
this?
Yeah, we
just had Adeline, yeah.
So you just had a kid, and you're like, let me start.
Well, you know, at first when I approached her, I definitely kind of expected her to be like, no, that's not the time to be doing this. It's not the time to be like trying to pursue something this out there. But first of all, she was like, no, like go for it. And that was amazing. And it's always amazing to have someone who's like, what do you need? Like type of mentality. Like, hey, like, what do we need to do it? Because I think also part of it is too, like we've always had a relationship where she knows that I don't make moves unless I can logically walk through the possibility and have a plan of how it's going to go and then have a backup plan if it's going to fail. And that's just how I've always been with things, specifically business moves. And with this, I chose the lowest risk option for myself with the lowest risk amount of money that would not put us in a financial bind per se. I wasn't taking out 100% of the savings and betting everything on this career. Right. You know, it was more just like, you know, I kept my 9-to-5 and, you know, I put X amount of money aside and said, okay, this X amount, that's the cap. That's all I'm putting into it. And we're going to see where it grows. And if it needs more, we'll put in more. But for now, I'm gonna let it ride 1 year, smart, and we'll reevaluate it. And actually, I've been evaluating quarter by quarter, just seeing like what the profitability is. Like, does it work? Does it not? And the biggest thing for me is it's been more about the branding, just like branding it and like trying to use all my connections that I've made in the past, you know, few years, and trying to connect them and make it happen. Nice. The other part of the whole entire idea of the Next Nomads is the idea.
So it's called the Next Nomads.
The Next Nomads.
Guys,
that's correct.
Find them on Instagram.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Come on. Plug it.
It's all about the idea of evolvability. So the Next Nomads, when I first started it, the idea was it didn't have to just be a clothing line. It could it could be more than just a community. It could be a coffee shop. It could be a creative ad firm if it needed to be. It could evolve with me long term. And the idea of the Next Nomad started a long time ago.
Right.
I mean, probably when I was in college, I've always wanted an evolvable idea. And I'm not sitting here saying, like, this is it. This is the next 30 years of my life. But I am saying that this is going to be at least the next year of my life, 2 years of my life, however long it takes. And so the idea with the clothing was, when I was living in Seattle, so we're going to rewind like 4 years ago, my wife and I first got married. We moved out to Seattle. Had never been to Seattle before. It was pretty, it was an adventure. We moved into this apartment. We were like, oh, we're going to just go to Seattle. We had X amount of savings and we were like, well, we're going to figure it out. And while we were in Seattle, one of the things I started doing was freelancing. So I had my camera and I started hitting up companies and being like, hey, like, there's a lot of companies based in Seattle, first of all, specifically clothing, shoes, products in general, you name it, a lot of tech companies out there. So I was hitting up all these companies. And when I say all these companies, I was probably hitting up anywhere between 60 to 100 a week emailing on top of my 9-to-5 job. And I was just constantly hitting up, hey, do you need any work? Photo work. And, you know, lo and behold, the first month was kind of slow. But next thing you know, 2-3 months later, in our little one-bedroom apartment, we're getting boxes and boxes of free products. And companies eventually were paying me, like, hey, like, go on an adventure in Mount Rainier. We're going to pay you X. And give us 50 photos for X. And so from that idea right there, I loved the fact that we were a young married couple. And I was finding a way to make X with my camera. And
nice,
I was like,
man.
And so when I first started the Next Nomads, I was like, I wonder what it would look like if I could start my own clothing line and I could fund adventures. So this is kind of like a complete other side note, but my wife got diagnosed with an autoimmune disease when we were in Charleston. So that's why we're back in Charlottesville. Now it's where we moved full circle. Mm. So we went from Seattle to Charleston, South Carolina, and then eventually moved to Charlottesville, Virginia, where we're residing now.
Right.
And so we can't travel as much as easy with the baby and with my wife. My wife's health at the time was not doing that well when we moved to Charlottesville. So traveling has not been like the easiest. So the Next Nomads was kind of like the idea of like, okay, like I've never felt like I've had a home. Like I've never felt like I'm meant to be here. I've kind of always felt like out there is home, right? And I know, and because of all the people I've met while traveling from Seattle to Charleston and all these adventures we've been on, I was inspired by these people. So there's like the Next Nomads was the idea of like all these people are all on their little journeys, their little paths, and they're all doing complex things that are creating their human experience. And the idea was like, what if I could create a clothing brand that was inspired by them, but could one day give back to them? Like, wouldn't it be so cool if I could, you know, go, hey, Obey, like, you really want to go to France? I would love to be able to give you X. You just give me X. Exactly what was happening in Seattle with all these other bigger companies. Now, granted, we are so far away from that,
wow.
Right?
But it's that, a good model, though.
But I just wanted you to see, like, the where it came full circle. Like,
yeah.
these companies in Seattle were allowing me to live by freelancing. And so 4 years later, I wanted to go, well, I wonder if long term I could ever do the same thing for others. And we'll see. Maybe one day I can. We're 6 months in. We're still, you know, we're only 2 quarters in. We have so much more time to grow.
Right.
That's just the idea.
You got some dope pieces, man.
Well, thanks,
real.
Man. I appreciate that.
Wow. That's awesome. So what would you say, I guess, to wrap up like Next Nomads, like what would you say is like your next big like goal plan? So would it be you to drop some new line items for people to check out? Would it be expanding to that coffee shop? Would it be doing some of the influencer work that you were talking about with like some Instagram people?
So we have a second lineup of clothes we want to drop. It's just nice. A matter of they're designed. We just have to work out like with distribution, what that's going to look like.
Nice.
I've been a little slow on that because I have been looking at what it would look like to build out a van and take a van to festivals to sell out of the van. We got invited to a couple of major outdoor festivals on the East Coast and the Midwest.
Yeah.
But it's not lucrative. It's not practical money wise, you know, to fly out to Chicago
exactly.
and then ship all my gear out to make X. Right.
Yeah.
And like I said, like I told you before, like I'm a very calculated person when it comes
right.
to business. So if the profitability was not there,
right.
I'm not going to do it. And
right.
You always take a loss in the first year. A lot of people won't tell you that. But you're going to take a loss in the first year whenever
exactly.
you start a business. You might take a loss for the first 3 years. You might be in the red. You know. However, when you take that loss, you have to be willing to know like what a loss that you're going to take whether or not it's an asset or a liability, right?
That's right.
So like will this loss of money make me more money long term, or is it going to just be loss of money?
Right.
And that is kind of where I'm at right now. So the next big moves are for me is drop more clothes, drop more lines, come up with more of a unique, engaging advertising experience in the cities that are popping right now. So right now, Seattle, Charleston, Lynchburg, and Portland, Maine have all been the hot spots for where our clothes are selling the fastest and the most right now. So that being said, we want to probably pour more advertisements into those areas, but we'll see. It's not necessarily like a, oh, it has to be this way type of thing. It's more and more of the things that it's been a lot of fun to kind of figure it out as we go. And who knows? Who knows what the next Nomads will lead to the next, whatever the next step will be. But yeah, that's kind of where we're at right now.
That's awesome, man. That's super dope. And like for me, I love business. I love encouraging people listening. Y'all make sure you really hone in on like, listen, me and Tommy here are two guys from college that are hustling, trying to make it. Do not let fear hold you back. Do not look at Virgil Abloh and be like, man, but he's the head of this company, this clothing line. Like, I'm not ever gonna make it there. Like, you can start today. You gotta be calculated. That's right. You gotta save. But if you're in your purpose and this is what, if your goal, if you love fashion, if you love music, whatever it is, and you want to be able to make it, there's no greater time in the world's history
than right now.
Than right now. That's powerful. All right, so I guess to wrap it up with you, Tommy, the one last thing I wanted to touch on would be, I wanted to know, like, this is so funny. Like, I'm not a big Marvel fan.
Oh no!
I know that you are. So I wanted to know your top five Marvel movies.
Oh, movies. Okay. Yeah. The MCU. Okay.
Right. I wanted to know if you then also think that DC could ever catch up.
Oh man.
And third,
you want to make some fanboys mad,
right?
Man.
We go do a little Marvel. We go have some fun, and if you get upset, I'm gonna pass out Tommy's Instagram and Twitter, so that you can make sure you have that conversation with him. But then we also want to play some trivia with you. Okay.
All right. You want to do top five first?
Yeah. Let's do top five first.
Oh man. All right. So top five.
Because I know that the last movie just dropped.
Endgame dropped. That's kind of tough to put the Endgame in there, but I think for me, it's gonna be Infinity War at the top.
Okay.
Winter Soldier. Iron Man. I'll put Endgame in the top five, I guess. Endgame. And I really love Guardians of the Galaxy, but I think Black Panther will be right there in the fifth. I don't know, man. Dude, you know what's really hard though, I'll be honest, is that it could there's so many good movies. Like, there's others all so good. There's only a handful that I don't like. I'm like,
I just want people to understand that I love Marvel. I wanted Captain Marvel to be up there, but
you could, like, it's like someone come up to me and be like, yo, Black Panther's my favorite. And I could be like, yo, I get why. Or they could be like, yo, Endgame's my favorite because it ends everything. I'm like, all right, cool. Or Captain America or Iron Man because it's the first, right? But, like, it's just so tough and it's so subjective, too.
Well, the Marvel community, is there a film that you feel like everybody in the Marvel community is like?
It was whack. Probably either Incredible Hulk or Iron Man 2. I think those are probably the two like worst films that no one really likes or really wants to watch. Yeah.
Incredible Hulk?
Wow. Well, because it had Edward Norton in it and it was like, and they recast him and it doesn't really feel like it fits. Like, you watch the film and it's like, it doesn't feel like it's really in the MCU, which it is. It is. I mean, it's connected, it doesn't feel connected.
Right. So the guy who played Mark Ruffalo is, you feel like, fits that character.
I think he fits it pretty well. I mean, you know, I liked Edward Norton, but at the end of the day, Mark Ruffalo is a good fit. You know, I think Mark Ruffalo takes on the more of the nerdy side of the Hulk and the Bruce Banner side, per se.
Right. Do you like DC?
I love DC. I'm a huge Batman fan, actually.
Which Batman?
My favorite Batman of all time is, are we talking... I would say Batman Beyond is actually my favorite Batman of all time. So, like, Terry back in the day.
Yes, the old TV
show.
Okay.
And I would love to see them do that modern day. I would love
it's
to see
a lot darker, that Batman.
I would love to see Michael Keaton come back and play retired Batman, and then we get a young guy like Robert Pattinson to play.
Do you really think, because I saw that.
Do I think he played Bruce Wayne? No. I think it's going to be garbage. But there's a lot of people who are going to argue that way.
Because I cannot remove the image. I was dating a girl back at that time, and she made me watch the freaking Twilight movie. And that man came out the forest. All I'm telling you right now.
You look like a disco ball.
Just like with the glittery chest. And I did understand what that had to do with the scene. His shirt was unbuttoned, and his chest is just all glittery.
Here's what I will say, though. Robert Pattinson is an amazing actor.
No, he's good.
I think my bigger problem with it is not his acting a talent, but like, is he going to bulk up? Is he going to be able to play like the suave Bruce Wayne, like the ladies man?
Or is he going to be billionaire? Like a tight jean?
It seems odd. It just seems like a weird casting.
He could have played a good Robin, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Or I think he could have played Batman Beyond, like the Terry right. character. I think he might have been able to pull it off. But Bruce Wayne, like in his young days, I don't know. We'll see.
Who would you have cast to play Batman? Replace Ben Affleck?
To replace Ben Affleck, so modern, right. like an older
like,
Batman.
Like, let's do, yeah, like, let's like say, hey, because I didn't feel like Ben. I like Christian Bale's.
Christian Bale's
Batman. I like the films. I thought they were really good. But like, if you could cast
anyone,
if they were giving you the in charge of finding like just someone who could fit the role, because I think that's what fans have been struggling with. Is like,
I think it's so tough because Batman is so iconic, and like you look back in history, and you know you see guys that you think might have been able to kill it, but it didn't. Like George Clooney, you'd think, he's a ladies' man, but he just really it didn't hit at all. It was really weird.
I think hit when it was like suit, dinner, suave.
But when it was Batman on, it was like, whoa, that doesn't fit.
Yeah.
I'm totally just drawing a blank on his name. Tom Hardy. Tom Hardy is a rough, tough dude. I kind of feel like he might be able to pull it off. He also a lot of people say he could pull off replacing Hugh Jackman as Wolverine too.
I think I could see it, but that him as Wolverine, I could see definitely.
Yeah,
see
that fits.
Yeah, I could see him coming out the water. I could see him with the character arc.
Batman is just for me is tough because I think that there's just too many factors, and I don't really know if I know of anyone like today that I'm like, yeah, definitely. Jake Gyllenhaal maybe. Maybe as like a younger Batman, but to replace Ben Affleck, it's tough because Ben Affleck was playing like an older, grittier, beaten up, worn down Batman, right?
Right.
So I don't know. I don't know. I think that if they're gonna recast it and go younger, I just really hope that Ben Affleck, just for canon's sake, comes back. Like when they do like a Justice League 2 or whatever. Or they just scrap the whole universe and restart over again. Like, I mean, just start over.
Right.
I mean, Wonder Woman is good, and Jason Momoa's Aquaman is pretty good, but everything else is kind of garbage.
Right. Jason Momoa, I was like, yo, if you ever want to recast and just like reboot a series, this dude came out that water. You were like, even though the movie, maybe the script wasn't well written, just seeing him,
he's a beefcake.
Whatever they're going to do for the future, women will flock to this film, and it will get better.
I'll be honest. My whole entire life, I've made fun of Aquaman because I hate Aquaman in the comic books.
Yes, it's
and then
so
I
trash.
Saw Jason Momoa's Aquaman, and I said, I want to be Aquaman. Like, and all my friends are clowning me because like, don't you think Aquaman's the weakest character? I'm like, yeah, I want to be Aquaman. Like, dude, tomorrow I want to be
Jason
Aquaman.
Jason Momoa had me in the gym. I'm like out here. I need to start rock climbing. Like,
a beast.
And, dude, he is in shape. Dude.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So to finish it out, I want to do a little Marvel trivia with you.
Okay.
All right. So I'm going to have my boy Elijah start a clock. We're going to do 2 minutes and 20 seconds for you.
I'm totally going to choke this.
All right. You got 22 questions.
22 questions?
20, easy? Easy.
Oh, no. All right. Let's do this.
You got to be quick because we got 2 minutes and 20 seconds.
Oh, gosh.
All right. You ready?
Okay.
All right. We're about to start. Now, do not freak out if you cannot answer. If you just want to say... here's what we can do. You want to do pass?
I'll do pass, yeah.
All right, so pass.
Let's see if I can get out of 22. Oh,
okay,
man.
Okay, so if we do pass, I'll just give you the answer.
Okay.
All right, ready?
All right.
Elijah, are we ready to go? All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1, go. Prior to Tom Holland taking the role, how many actors have played Spider-Man on the big screen in the U.S.?
In the big screen? It's only two, right?
Correct. Good job. All right, next one. What movie did Thanos first appear in? You got this.
Guardians of the Galaxy. Oh, no? Really? Oh, I
forgot. Come on, one more guess.
I forgot.
Come on, it's one of your favorites. Starts with an A.
Was it the Avengers?
The film? Avengers. He appears in a mid-screen,
mid-credit scene. Oh, he shows his face, right? Yep. Oh, I should have known that.
Aside from Stan Lee, which character has appeared in the most MCU films?
Oh, it's got Robert Downey Jr.
Correct. In the Guardians of the Galaxy, what is the name of the dog in the collector Tanalir?
Cosmo.
Correct. Good job. How many versions of the Iron Man armor has Tony Stark made?
Oh, no. I don't know that one. I was arguing with someone the other day.
Okay, I'll help you. It's above 25.
I want to say it's 42.
You're really close.
54? The lower? Oh, no. I'm not going to pass. I'm not going to get that.
50 suits.
50 suits? Okay,
what does the acronym SHIELD stand for?
Oh, pass because I'm not going to get that off the top of my head.
Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics
Division.
I
can't think that fast. There's no way.
How many one-shot short films were made?
Five?
Correct. Yeah. Wow. How many Infinity Stones are there in the MCU?
Six.
Correct. What is the name of Jane's sidekick played by Kat Dennings in Thor?
Oh, I forgot her name. Doesn't that sound like irrelevant?
Right. Dude, the name really fits the way she looks, dude. Darcy Lewis.
Darcy Lewis. I forgot her name.
What is the name of Ben Kingsley's Iron Man 3 character who's hired to play the Mandarin?
Oh, I don't know. I forgot. I don't know.
Trevor Slattery. Who trained Matt Murdock on Daredevil?
Oh, it was, blind dude. Dang it.
Yes. Come on.
A stick.
Yes, stick. Good job. What is the name of the Super Soldier Project in Captain America, the First Avenger?
I don't know. No.
Starts with the R.
I'm done. Pass.
Project Rebirth. What was the first film in Phase 3 of the MCU?
I think we just tied time. I don't know.
The first film of the MCU. Come on.
Phase 3?
Yeah. Last one. Captain America Civil War? Yeah.
I don't know why in my head I was trying to think of like Spider-Man Homecoming was like the first episode, the first one of Phase 4. I don't know why in my head I kept thinking, I kept mixing that one up.
Yeah, they were going through this like trivia, I was like, man, these are real, like, how many recast have they
You
done?
Know who could get them all is Jake Holland, without a
doubt. Oh,
yeah.
Like, the GOAT. I hope I can get Jake on this podcast.
Yeah, man. I'm sure you could if he's ever back in Lynchburg.
Yeah, man. Or maybe we can start traveling, you know. We're really trying to make this thing legit, man. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, he'd be a good guest. He has a lot up here.
Right. He's really awesome. Man, Sojourners, this has been so much fun. Tommy, thank you for being here, man.
Thank you for having me.
I really appreciate you. I think this was such a fun conversation. To those watching, please follow at The Next Nomads.
That's right.
Follow the clothing line. Buy a sweatshirt, a t-shirt, a mug, a hat. It's super dope stuff. I really like it. And make sure you follow my boy, Tommy Tran, at Tommy Tran Pro.
That's right.
At Tommy Tran Pro. Follow him on social media. Sojourners, hope you guys enjoyed the conversation. We're going to also link my top five favorite books in the podcast notes and in the description below. So that way you guys can get that, because I wasn't prepared for that question, but I will give you my top five books that have influenced me. Thank you guys for listening. Have a blessed day. All right.